Greetings, Wargamers. We're your hosts, Trevor,
Jay,
Josh,
and this is
Shane Attack.
Is sponsored by Discount Games Incorporated. Discount Games Incorporated offers the maximum discount on Privateer Press products. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free or reduced shipping. You can find the web store at www.discountgamesinc.com. Welcome to Chain Attack, the War Machine and Hordes podcast. I'm your host, Trevor, and I write more papers. More and more papers.
Delicious.
So is it true or not true that papers are likened to cowbell?
Not true at all.
So why are you treating papers like cowbell, Trevor?
As a matter of fact, probably what your paper needs is more cowbell.
Because it's the requirement of the degree. I you know what? Honestly, I don't think they actually read it. I think they just kind of skim what I put. I mean, my paper's going to be 100 pages long. If you were grading that, would you read the whole damn thing?
I would be listening to it on Audible as I'm doing with
no, you wouldn't, because you'd be
asleep. Mueller report.
You would be put to sleep.
I have been putting myself to sleep with it.
Okay, well, if I put cowbells in there, I promise you, you probably wouldn't even know.
Trevor's got a fever, and the only thing that can fix it is more papers. HIPAA papers. I'm Jay, and I've been playing King of Nothing
with Clock-a-doodle-doo.
The Clockatrices, and I've been playing Eternal.
And I'm Josh, and I've been playing Champions, because I'm getting my Midas and Rask lists some table time, thanks to my true meta in Denver. And I
that hurts about that, Josh,
yes.
Is that we want you ever so dearly to play here. And actually, you have been.
Getting better. It's getting better. Like, I'm bringing Rask this Wednesday.
Like, I live in hope that when June is done and this big construction project's done, that you'll have a life again.
Yes, that makes many of us. And I have also started playing Eternal on Jay's recommendation.
What have you thought of it?
It's fun. It feels like a CCG.
Yeah.
Like, pretty well put together.
Listen.
My heart still belongs to Hearthstone. I'm a dork.
It has the Team Mage seal of approval. That's all you need.
What else do you need? The one thing that bugs me about, and this isn't, the game is good. Eternal's good. The one thing that bugs me is I'm like, okay, so really all I'm doing here is learning the language for, the same abilities again, you know, like.
Sure, yeah.
Instead of Rush, it's, I can't remember what it is.
Right.
Wild
the
or whatever.
The thing that's nice about it, though, is that it's, like, I have a hard time remembering them sometimes, but it's really easy to highlight.
Yeah, the tooltips are great. But so it's sort of like, yeah, I can speak Portuguese, and yeah, I can muddle through Spanish. That's how all the CCGs start to feel for me. Right? Like, they run together just a little bit, you know, but it's been fun.
So this week, we have a very, very special guest.
The most special!
I would like to refute the statement, but I cannot.
I also cannot.
So, I can, but I don't have time.
The man who, really, the spirit of the Dracodile Spirit Award is with us.
Right? Sure.
All right. I'll buy in.
One William Hungerford.
Hello. How's everyone doing?
We're great. So
I'm getting lock and load, so everything's a blur.
Oh,
I'm sure.
That's true. 2 weeks? Are we 2 weeks away?
Tomorrow. Basically tomorrow. Then what, Gen Con's like the weekend after?
Yeah,
like,
basically.
Interesting.
I just to make you feel a little bit jealous, Will, I know that you are also a Disney super fan. And on the 4th
Jay, if you tell me you're going to Disney while I'm at Gen Con or another show, I'm going to hang up right now.
Oh, wow.
No, I'm working Gen Con like you are. So, but in between, on the 4th of July...
You're riding the line.
I'm going to Disneyland with one Michael Chili Winners and Aaron Well, and it's going to be glorious.
What, have you already seen Galaxy's Edge?
No.
So will you see Galaxy's Edge on this trip?
Yeah, the first time, yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
I'm sure it will be a madhouse.
Actually, the tickets, right now you have to have a ticket to get in.
Okay.
The tickets are free.
Okay.
But like right now, I had friends who went to who live in Anaheim.
Okay.
And they went there on opening weekend. And evidently everyone was like, oh, the park's going to be crazy busy. And so on. No one showed up.
So it was like the game of chicken and everybody peeled off, basically. And
it was less busy than just a normal Saturday.
Interesting. Okay.
So, Jay, two things. I'm going to unfriend you from social media during that week.
Okay.
I
want
to see posts. Okay. Smart. Price smart.
I'll be sure to text them to you.
And two, what kind of lightsaber are you going to get?
I don't know. I'm not sure if I'll even get one.
What?
We'll see. I already have one.
Are you more of a scoundrel than a Jedi?
No, I mean, obviously I'm a Jedi, but I already have...
Sith! Excuse me.
I already have a nice aluminum replica lightsaber.
But not from Disney.
It's true. It's not from Disney.
Where is it from?
Just online.
Did you know there's a place here local in Idaho Falls that makes incredible replicas? Like, they just sell them online.
I did not know.
Like, my guys have wired up their shop when they expanded.
Oh, cool.
Had to get some 480 volt in there. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, obviously.
100%. Anyway, yeah.
That's how you charge the sabers.
Gosh, now I got it. Yeah. Now I can't remember the name of the place. I'll find it. I'll have to send it to you because I would be interested for you to compare what their stuff looks like.
One of my favorite tweets about Galaxy's Edge opening was... someone said, like, my favorite part of Star Wars A New Hope was when Ben goes to Mos Eisley and stands in line at 8 a.m. only to be told that the line for the canteen is already closed at 8 a.m.
Oh, that's awesome.
Are both rides going to be open when you're there?
I don't think so.
Ah, well, at least I got that going for me.
And
Will.
I think that they still won't have Fast Pass on the one ride either, so we'll see.
Ah.
Yeah.
So now I'm less jealous.
Yes. Spite will warm you.
Well, I have to, because this dude goes to Disney like 7 times a month.
Yeah, we're numb to it here. You just got to get numb to it, Will. That's all.
And then what he does to repay me for suffering through all his joy is takes me out to P.F. Chang's.
Clearly he is a Sith.
If you weren't so fun to troll, Will.
I don't know. I've been putting on some pretty good shows at the dinners lately.
It's true.
We're not going to talk about those on the podcast, though.
Hungerford is pretty good at performance art.
Yes.
Okay, so to start things off, we're going to talk about the Chain Attack Community Builders. Josh, what is our first... what is our topic?
Okay, so I believe... Actually, whatever. Who's going to argue with me?
No one.
Our topic is running events for your local community, which has like the most nominations that I've seen in a long time. So first of all, kudos to the beautiful Chain Attack Community Builders community. And now onto the accepted nomination. Now, Trevor and I had a pretty rigorous internal debate here because there were two cat pictures on two different nominations, and it really came down to that, you know, which was
obviously
the superior cat picture.
It's a good thing that
Jay was distracted.
No, the superior cat picture lost.
That's your opinion. Actually, it's probably true.
That picture's amazing. I want to make it my profile pic.
Okay, you can do that. Then everyone will know. So, fine. We went with the superior nominee. Is that what you want me to say? There, fine. I said
Can you
it.
See the cat picture of the superior nominee?
Oh, dang, fool. It's merely cuteness. Oh,
yeah. Okay.
Man, all the viewers right now, like, yes. Our listeners.
This is amazing
like, oh,
radio.
Yeah, Will is enjoying the same experience as our listeners.
Believe
right
it
now.
Or not, you can. If you'll go to Facebook, chainattack.com/communitybuilders.
Oh, actually, solid.
That's not correct.
Man, do a search for Chain Attack Community Builders.
If you had whipped that out, I would be amazed. Okay, so this nomination was by Alex Bond, and he said, I'd like to nominate Mike Corkhill, a.k.a. Boost, which is a totally sweet handle, Boost. Alex says, he tells a little story, so I'm going to go into a storytelling voice here, all right?
Sorry, what's the name of the person who won?
Mike Corkhill.
Okay.
Which is what you build terrain out of for War Machine. Corkhills.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Alex says...
Close.
I arrived in Dayton, Ohio in 2016, excited to dive back into War Machine, right on the crest of Mark III. I found a community of friendly, patient, helpful players, but always out in front is Mike. He organizes at least 6 events for our community, holy Moses, every year. It's probably more. I just have an iffy memory for that. That's because after that many events,
they would all run together. A former PG, he didn't let the dissolution of the PG program stop him from being a passionate leader, organizer, player, and ambassador for War Machine and Hordes. Anyway, he goes on. He says, it's not just Steamroller. He says, we usually have a journeyman league a year. They recently did a 5v5 Stormbreak throwdown. They've done caster draft, team tournaments, champions, food machine event. And he says, even when Mike isn't personally leading the event, he's got a hand in its planning, either helping with the venue, suggesting formats, helping with rules the days of, always behind the scenes. And he says, anytime he's not running an event, he's linking us up with other nearby metas so we can crash their events. So, and then there, he has multiple members of his meta that agree with the nomination. And, I just thought it's exactly the kind of, that's exactly the kind of community building that we like to talk about. And it highlights once again, what a big deal running events and just being a positive presence in your meta is for building the meta. Honorable mention, Jarrett Ralston, will you please like just send me a message on Facebook? I really want to know about your city burning down.
What?
Yeah, one of the nominees was for a guy who really helped build the meta and a community back up after the city burned down.
The city, not the store.
Yeah,
the
city. That's what it says. So I'm just saying, I need a little more. I need more of that story, please. Maybe, maybe renominate later with more story and a cat picture, and I won't be able to refuse.
Mike Corkill, by the way, is an amazing nomination because I know Mike and he's seen him at all kinds of shows over the last 8 years at Privateer. Like it was mentioned, he was a press ganger. And Mike's an awesome, just a great dude. He's super friendly, super easy to get along with. Like you just start up a conversation with him and his passion is basically an endless well. Like he just lives and breathes the community and promoting it. And like, there's the people that like to play games and the people that it's more important that they are helping other people play games, right? Like, they get their enjoyment out of other people's joy.
Yeah.
Basically, the opposite of me and Jay going to Disney. and, like, that is Mike. He's that kind of guy. So, like, as soon as you said his name, I was like, yeah, that makes complete sense.
Well, that tracks with a lot of the stories that were told of him. One of the quotes that is attributed to him is that he says, I run events for the community. I didn't do it for the title, which I thought was pretty interesting. Like, so yeah, that makes a big difference. So Mike, congratulations. Contact UJ, right? For, I don't remember what this week's prize is because I only keep track of one prize.
This week's going to be, he's going to get a battle box from Discount Games Inc.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
oh, I got to find the Dank Dune memes real quick while you
okay,
carry
I'll,
on.
I'll start you, shielding while you...
Yes, shill away.
So first with Muse on Minis, I will... So we ran an event, I ran an event this last weekend or maybe the one before where we did the caster draft event and I ordered the cards off of, I think it's Drive-Thru RPG.
I am so deeply sad that I could not make this event, honestly.
We'll do it again.
Okay, I'm glad. Because it looks awesome, the cards.
Yeah, it's like, a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Anyone who hasn't played it...
go play it.
Go play it. Buy the cards online. It's great. It's worth it.
Total value.
Yes. So we had a fun time, but during this... one of my friends was playing in it, Rick, and he has a beautiful blue move line tray that, you know, has all his materials in it.
All the widgets.
Yes.
Yes. 14 inches of measurement.
And he dropped that on the floor.
Oh, no.
Four times during the event.
Like the whole tray?
Yes.
Okay.
With all the content spilling out everywhere, then he'd gather it all back up, put the lid back on.
Which I'm sure it was easy to do. I mean, you just scoop and everything's going to fall right into place.
But just speaks to the craftsmanship quality.
The durability.
From Muse on Minis that you can treat it like your unloved stepchild.
I have to tell you, Jay, that the move line tray is actually one of the reasons I'm happy to be appearing more in my true home meta. Because when I go to Denver, when I go to Denver, I mean, back home, like, I don't take the move line tray with me because I only pack a tournament bag.
Right.
Like, if the list can't fit in a tournament bag, it doesn't go to Denver. That's my rule. Because I have to fly on, like, you know, basically a biplane that has no space for cargo, et cetera.
You think he's joking here, but he's not.
It's pretty close. Yeah. So I love playing at home because I have my move line tray. Oh my gosh. So I was playing in Denver this week without it.
Your move line tray, like a savage.
Oh, it was like, it was basically like missing two limbs.
I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Josh, but you can place a move line tray in your luggage and
What?
He doesn't take luggage. He only took his minis.
Actually, you're laughing, but I've literally done that.
I know you have.
Where like I have the tournament bag and I'm like, "Oh good. There's
enough
one
tray room at the top where I can
cram my underpants into there."
Okay.
See, I know you so well.
I've only done it like once, I promise, but I was like, "That was pretty nice."
Actually. Next topic.
I'm taking the smallest type of rollaway bag, but you're right. The MoveLine chair would probably still fit in there, and yeah, I will do that next.
Yeah.
Time. Yeah. So that I can still experience the glory.
Yeah. You can get those at MuseOnStore.com. For Discount Games Inc., we're doing a lot with the blog with Discount Games Inc. I should, on hopefully Monday or Tuesday, I'm going to have another unboxing video with another wave of Infernals models. One of them I'm pretty excited for. I was kind of actually blown away that this shipped to me, but you'll have to check out the unboxing and see me.
Oh, what an incredible tease. Well done, Jay.
I'll let it slip. There's going to be an unboxing of the Infernal Gate, the 120 millimeter
cool
structure. So pretty excited.
I can't wait to see the next blog.
I don't even
he started painting the heavies, right?
Yeah, well, screw you, Will.
If you were going to Disneyland over the 4th of July, you probably could.
I used to be a respected guest on this podcast.
I don't recall those times. Sorry.
Age has made us crankier, Will.
And one other thing from Discount Games Inc. We talked a little bit about the Games Workshop paint line update last week. I've learned a little bit more about it since then. They're actually changing up their paint line quite a bit. I previously had their 300 paint line. It's now expanding up to 360, and they're retiring around 70.
So is that like that's how many different pots there are basically?
They're adding their paint line is going to go from what I'm carrying is going from having 300 pots to 360.
Okay.
And part of that also is that around 70 pots are retiring. And so it's going to be around 130 new, and a lot of them are
just variations,
old ones
on the shade
that were like a different, a larger size or something like
that.
So
Jay, remind me, when does the contrast come in?
Is going to be for sale, pre-sale tonight.
Oh man, because I just picked up a Hut Chuck, and I really want my daughter to do contrast with Hut Chuck.
And because Games Workshop has done such a good job of marketing this. Stores can't get enough to meet demand.
Okay.
So what we're doing is tonight at, this is Friday when this podcast is going live. We're going to have what inventory we have of it. We're going to put up at 11 PM Mountain Standard Time.
Okay.
And we're doing it as, sets of the contrast paint. It's going to be 34, this has 34 paint pots. In the paint set of the contrast paints.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And two contrast primers.
Oh.
And you're going to get all of that in the sets. And we're going to sell them as sets. And then when the restart stocks start coming in, we'll start selling them individually.
Oh, I see.
And so
okay.
For people who are not looking for the whole set, we'll hopefully get it soon with a restock. Those who are interested in the whole set, log in and get it towards the start
right,
of launch,
because yeah.
I'm expecting they are going to go fairly quickly.
What if I'm going to get the whole set, Jay, with the amazing pricing available at Discount Games Incorporated, what am I going to expect to spend?
$1 million.
Let me real quick look at the website.
Yes, for once, I caught him off guard instead of him bringing a topic catching us off guard.
Part of the problem is that, so we created the listing. And when we got our initial information,
yeah,
we knew that there were two primers that were coming out with it.
Oh, uh-huh.
But we thought that they were just normal primers.
Okay.
That was what kind of the information we had indicated.
Yeah, yeah.
But they actually are going to be contrast primers. And so the listing right now just has the 34 paint pots. It's going to be updated to it's going to have the primers when it's when you are able to buy it tonight.
Right.
But right now it's live with no inventory with just the paint pots. And so it's going to be a little bit more than what I'm going to tell you right now. But the suggested retail on it was for the 34 paints was $265.
Okay.
And then at 15% off, it's $225. And then that will automatically qualify for our deals that are too good to be mentioned on the air.
I still liked when you called that Voldemort pricey.
Fair enough.
Okay, good to know.
So there are a lot of hobbyists, whether they play Private Press games, Games Workshop games, whatever games, that love the Citadel paints. And it's going to be very exciting to see how well this paint line lives up to the hype it's had of being able to get like battle ready tabletop miniatures out
basically in 20 minutes or whatever. Right. A
yeah, I mean, the intention of it is that one coat will do your base, your shade, and your highlight all in one coat.
Yeah, call me skeptical.
We'll see.
Hello, skeptical.
Hi, Dad.
I have a Dank Dune meme for you.
Excellent. We're very excited.
Okay. I've never seen this meme format before, but this couple is lying in bed, and the woman says, honey, please wake up our son. And then the next panel, the dad is like holding his son's collar, and he is saying in this meme, Paul Atreides isn't really a good guy, quote. Neither is his son Leto II or the Bene Gesserit. All the characters in Dune have very serious flaws. With Dune, Frank Herbert is warning the reader of the dangers of charismatic leaders.
That is quite the wake up.
And that is a wake up for the son. So stupid.
Okay. I don't know why we thought
the audio memes.
Yeah, I don't know why we thought that a Dank Dune meme segment was a good addition to the podcast. But
I never claimed that. Are.
Okay.
That's a recurring segment?
Yes.
Hey, buddy. You know how sometimes you and I call each other and we just talk about what's going on?
Yes, I do know that.
I feel that perhaps we should have a follow-up soon.
Okay. My phone is always open to you.
Yeah.
Listen, we've been here a long time, and the quality of our show has stayed relatively low. We were once top of the heap because we were the only
one. The heap?
Yeah, we were the heap. Now we're pretty much the bottom.
Yeah, I think the point where you're reading out visual Dune memes as a recurring segment, you might be like, wait a second.
I'm here for my own joy, Will.
Don't steal our joy.
You know what? That's fair. You live your best life.
Listen, when we record, we're the only three people in this room, so it's all for us.
That one was pretty bad, though.
Okay, so we've actually have a bunch of topics to cover. I'm very excited. So the first thing that I wanted to go over, and as someone who has... I'm assuming you still are, has been in charge of organized play with Privateer Press. We wanted some input from you, Will. So the first one was a couple of episodes ago, we talked about the Champions format on here. And one of the things we said was that sometimes it felt like either the vision of what Privateer Press wanted out of the format was a little bit muddled, or that maybe the players didn't fully understand, or... you know, whatever. And so I guess I'd like to go straight to the source and see what do you kind of see as the vision for Champions? What do you see as the type of player that it's targeted to? What is it trying to accomplish?
Sure. So what it's trying to accomplish right now is the line for War Machine and Hordes, as you're well aware, is very deep. And if you're coming in to play the game, when you're looking at the entire meta, it's enormous. There's so many different options. And it's a lot to try and focus on. And, you know, it's a thing I see a lot in the community, because I'm in all the Facebook groups and jump on Discord and just listen to people talk and have conversation with them. And there's a certain mentality sometimes, it's definitely not with everyone, where they see a problem list pop up and they're like, well, I can't solve that. It can't be beaten. And it's because a game like ours takes more time than, say, something like Magic the Gathering, where the meta sort of naturally cycles, like one deck rises to popularity and people can get in a ton of reps of Magic games to test out different things and, you know, create the natural predator of the top list, and then it becomes the top list and something else becomes its predator. That cycle goes slower in War Machine because the games take 2 hours. And then when you get something as deep as War Machine and you can use all these models, I think it actually even slows down things just a little bit more because it's a bigger investment. You've got more models you have to pick up and paint and put together and then try. And so sometimes those top lists stay on top when there might be a natural predator out there, but people aren't finding them. So one of the things Champions offers is to limit the pool of of options, both theme forces and casters, to shrink the size of potential predator and prey within the meta so that people feel they have a greater chance to experiment and enjoy certain casters that they might not see rise to prominence in the Masters and Standard Steamroller. For example, you know, if we only made it one, and we wouldn't do this, but say we made it one caster per faction at its most extreme, and we chose casters that we wanted people to, you know, you just don't see a lot of play. It would create a format that gave people those opportunities and to experiment and try stuff. The reason it is multiple casters and themes is because we know that list building and list variation is a major point of the enjoyment of the game. So point one of Champions is to create an alternate meta from the standard Masters meta and one that can rotate faster by the ADR changing. In doing so, one of the second points it hits is while it is a competitive format and it is the Iron Gauntlet format this year, so it's definitely not like new, brand new player friendly. It is, you know, definitely made for competitive play. If you're starting to get into more competitive play and, you know, there's a lot to learn, there's a lot of different matchups to learn, this gives you a way to jump in into an evolving meta and start testing things out and trying things out. And then who knows, maybe you come out of a champion season with a list that people didn't normally see get played in the Masters meta that you did really well within Champions, and you carry it over into Masters and start playing it and you start having success there as well. So I'd say the main thing it's trying to promote is just an opportunity for variation in the standard predator prey cycle of strong list being strong and then people knocking them off their pedestals.
Okay. So do you feel that that has always been the vision for Champions, or has that kind of evolved to
this? It has evolved.
This is the current vision of what we want it to be, and it's changed some from there.
Will never make it as a politician. He just admitted.
Right.
He admitted that it has evolved.
It has evolved.
Okay.
It evolved starting with season, I want to say, starting with season 7 and then really refined with season 8. You know, one of the original ideas with Champions was to see lesser played things overall.
Okay.
Be uncommon pairings and things you just normally see, because we had, you know, you don't need a limited format that at that time had Haley 2 and Asphyxius 2 in it, because they were running roughshod all over the Masters meta at that time. And this was to create sort of a safe harbor where other lists could thrive and do well in a competitive environment. But then that just to evolve and to generally, you know, create again a safe harbor of limited options, but still make them all. Don't worry about limited pairing numbers, and don't worry about, well, this thing is played the least amount. Just make it all a good, solid, limited format. And one of the things we do when we create the ADRs now is we look at what we're giving each faction, what list they can create, and how they play up against other lists. And it's why during the Steamroller CID, there was a lot of unhappiness with the initial Circle CID.
Uh-huh.
So we dev chatted it, and we listened to what people were saying. And sometimes you get the, well, this is what I play in Masters, so it needs to be in Champions because nothing else can be competitive. And I worry sometimes that people don't always look at, well, is the thing that your other lists couldn't compete with not in Champions, so you don't have to worry about it and you can try these other things? And that's a hard thing to always be able to figure out, because again, you need to get all those reps in. But nowadays we try to just create a good balance of options per faction with consideration of the types of things that they will face.
So would it be fair to say that the current evolution is you're essentially creating an alternate meta?
That's the idea, is to create a limited meta that can, you know, rotate slightly. We're down to where like typically only about two casters and a theme rotate per faction. So that's not always the standard case. Some things change more or less. And the reason we try and limit the rotation is so that every 6 months you aren't having to go out and buy completely brand new lists. If you had a list that stayed on with the rotation, you still have something you can fall back on while you begin experimenting with something else. But yeah, that's the overall idea. And it's evolved to this point because War Machine and Hordes has so many options, you know, and Champions will continue to evolve, because I see it continuing to evolve to becoming sort of the true limited format of the game, which War Machine and Hordes is, it needs.
Sure.
I'm
going to make a statement, Will, and it's going to be my own statement. Not endorsed by Will Hungerford or Privateer Press. I want to make this very clear.
Or Chain Attack?
Sure, or Chain Attack.
Okay, just checking.
These
I want to know how far out you're going.
These statements are my own responsibility. But part of the reason why I'm excited for the upcoming season of Champions is that it's felt to me like I've been excited about the idea of a limited format, but it hasn't felt like we've gotten everything right on getting us there yet. And it feels like this upcoming season is one where we're finally going to be there. And my concern is that, you know, people may have been upset over the current set of ADR casters or whatever, or the current rules or whatever, and that they're not going to give a chance to what it is evolving into and what the new stable of casters is evolving into. And what I would like to see is for people to approach it with an open mind and not necessarily be prejudiced or judging it versus what some of the things it's been or has looked like in the past.
Yeah, it's kind of what I was saying to my points of what it exists for. It's the idea is for you to have a new list building meta, a new mental exercise. So, you know, say that I'll just use Signar as an example. And say that like Striker 3 is just never a caster you really reach for. Like you're never like, I'm going to play Striker 3 list for, you know, whatever reason. And you look at the current, whatever current champion's meta might be, and Striker 3 is on there, and say that Striker 3 Storm Division is available to you. And like, you're like, oh, I normally wouldn't want to play that. But then if you like look at the other factions, you're like, wait a second, you know, this ADR seems really infantry heavy. And there's a lot of light infantry in particular, you know, and you start looking at what everyone else has got. And you're like, oh man, maybe I can build a Striker 3 list that can really chew up what my opponents are bringing. And then look and sort of figure out, okay, well, what are the predators of that kind of list going to be within the confines of what my opponents can take from? And to me, that seems like that's the fun of it. And that's, you do have to approach it, like you said, with an open mind every time, because the lessons you sort of learn from the established standard meta don't always apply, because the things you have to worry about may not exist.
Jay, what do you think? What is it that makes you feel like we're going to be there, we've gotten there?
Well, one of the things that I'm excited about is that, and this is maybe a little bit more explicit on things that I'm saying as opposed to Will or Privateer Press, but I'm hopeful, given the testing that how things were looking with the current set of ADR casters, that it is going to be an interesting meta. And a lot of people were kind of disgruntled with the current lineup of ADR casters, where they felt like Iona, Zaltu, you know, et cetera, was kind of running roughshod over that enclosed meta, and that some of the factions just weren't really, they felt like, competitively viable. And so I'm excited to see that evolution. I mean, one of the things that I think kind of led to, there was, in the early evolution of champions, if there was a new caster, they were automatically added into the meta.
And that rule got pulled.
And that caused balance problems. And then there was, which it just would. and so that's been changed. And then there was kind of a little bit, maybe this was intentional or maybe I'm just imagining it, but new casters weren't automatically added in, but it did seem like they were looked at favorably in getting added into the ADR, which comes from a good place because everyone wants to play with a new caster. But then you do have things where Iona is looking very dominant in a closed meta.
Yeah, I agree with you. And to further go into it, it's like, it's not that Iona won't ever show up on the ADR again. We know Iona is strong. We know that Iona at the Devourer's Host is a really strong list, right? It's that if Iona appears in the ADR, that there will be a closer eye put towards, you know,
things
what would happen.
Fight against
her. Yeah, they make sure that there are predators that exist there. And to be honest, she was probably put on the ADR a little too early in that last season. And so we're just learning from a lot of those when things like those happen and refining every time. And so I do agree that this champion season is a lot. But it's like a good example is we did put it through the CID.
Right.
And we had a whole dev chat on the Circle ADR. And from that, there was a lot of good points and discussion had with the community about the reason they wanted Bones instead of Secret Masters. Like, they was currently Secret Masters Wild Hunt. But one of the proposed options given was a couple different ADR caster configurations, and one had Kruger 2. And some people immediately jumped on, oh yeah, put Kruger 2 Bones in there. And a lot of people were like, don't do that. Here's why. And they gave out really great, well-thought-out arguments. And so, you know, spoiler alert, Kruger 2 is not going to be on the ADR. He was never originally on it. It was just sort of like it was one of the proposed options. But Bones is in. So Secret Masters drops out, Bones goes in. And so it'd be Bones Wild Hunt. And then it will be one of the configurations that people saw in the dev chat with Kruger 2 actually swapped out for, I think, Baldur 1, if I'm not mistaken. But I had to look at the final version we put in there.
Cool. Well, I'm very excited for the new season of Champions. One of the things that Gameopolis, my game store, is going to do is that we hold our War Machine Nights on Wednesday, and we are, for the month of July, we're doing a Champions League. There's five Wednesdays in July, and each week for game night, we're encouraging people to play Champions List for the game night. And so it's a really simple way to have some structure to the game night. And we do have some players who right now they may be starting the game fresh or starting a new faction or whatever, and they don't have necessarily the theme lists that match up with it. And people are going to be able to play whatever they want if they don't want to play Champions. But it's just kind of a encouragement if you're interested in checking this out.
That's really smart because, you know, and I'll tell this to anybody listening, if you have a community where you start to hear anybody say, because it happens if you play the same game over and over and over again. Like I said, the War Machine meta does move slower than a lot of other games.
Right.
And if they start to feel a little bit of burnout, that happens because they might be facing the same kind of lists and the same kind of problems. Running, like you said, a Champions League, or, you know, it doesn't even have to be an actual event being held at a store. It opens things up. It lets people put different models on the table and then face different models. So that the game that they're enjoying, that they still have fun with, now they actually get to see that variety. Because it can be very easy to be like, man, I'm doing really well with these two or three lists, and I've got a steamroller coming up, and I've got a Masters qualifier coming up, so I'm only going to play these. But you do that for long enough, and you're just doing the same thing over and over again, right?
Yeah,
and I think it's really smart.
To your point, one of my friends has been theory crafting his Signar lists, and he's looking towards taking Striker 3 as one of his casters, which up to this point had just never been on his radar.
In consideration.
And that, you know, our meta almost, I would guess, a small fraction of our meta has ever seen Striker 3 on the table. So
just tell me the truth, Jay. Am I going to see, crap, what's the stupid Crucible Picard Colossus that I hate? Vulcans? Am I going to see Vulcans on the table still?
Yes.
Whatever.
No.
Yes, no. I'm going to take time off from writing my paper to bring a Vulcan just for John.
Trevor will continue writing his paper until November, and I'll be playing Infernals.
My paper will be done long before November. The Vulcan's coming.
As long as you name your Vulcan HIPAA violation, I'm okay with it.
I now activate my HIPAA violation. Bend over, please.
Jay, to speak to the Striker 3 thing, another thing, you know, if somebody's primarily only a Masters and Steamroller player, you still probably want to go play in a Champions League or something like that, or play in a Champions event. The information you would get from playing in one of them is still useful in your main games. So if you just never play Striker 3, and you go play in a Champions League like what you're running, and you get a couple games in against them, at least as a player, you're educated a bit more on how he operates in Mark 3. Because there are people that just dark horse in tournaments, and from being at plenty of tournaments like y'all have, people win, and they may not go the whole way sometimes, but like they'll 3-1, they'll 4-1 with a dark horse. And a lot of that comes from people who are like, what does that caster do?
Right.
Yeah, I've been knocked out more than once by just something that I'm like, I have no clue what this does.
It's part of the reason why I'm excited about Champions is that, A, it is something, I think limited format is good. I think switching things up is good. I also think that it is valuable for competitive players. When you go to a national event that is a three-day tournament, you are going to see a Masters event and a Champions event, and those are the two competitive formats, and I have some fun with the Champions event. You know, it's,
and the painting requirements are gone.
Yeah.
Popular demand, so easier than ever to jump into one.
Yeah. So I guess to close out this segment, one thing we'll say is that with the Chain Attack community builders, we want to encourage people to give Champions a test run, try it out, let us know what you think. We're going to have a post in the community builders Facebook page where we talk about Champions, where we talk about people can ask questions about getting events to succeed, stuff like that. And then also do posts about nominating someone else about who's been successful in getting Champions to succeed in their area. And at the end of August, we will, at the start of one of our shows, select one of the nominations and give out a Dracodile Spirit Award to whoever Josh picks.
Let's be honest.
Just as a reminder, everybody, the ADR season is about to rotate right after Lock and Load. Yep. So if you're thinking about jumping in any events or you hear this, you're like, oh, I could run a league. Give it like a, when is this going live, Jay? Like
tonight.
It's going live tonight.
Tonight? Okay. So like in a couple of weeks, right after Lock and Load, the new ADR season will rotate. So I could say, like, if you're thinking about it, maybe start planning now and then get ready for the new rules to hit you.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, we're starting our ADR league first Wednesday of July. So
cool.
Preparing my HIPAA violation right now.
Good idea also on giving out the best huge base model ever produced by Privateer Press, both in terms of faction rules and sculpt.
Preach it. Yes, full preach.
How do you feel about the Vulcan versus Dracodile matchup, John?
I'm still working on that, you piece of garbage.
Okay. He did slide in there. Best rules. So
yeah, best rules.
If I just don't get my Lanissa killed, I'll beat you next time, Gadget.
Okay, so next segment, the topic that we're going to cover. I wanted to talk real quick about some of the exciting upcoming things that are coming out of Privateer Press that you've been working on, Will.
Heck yeah, let's do it.
We can maybe go through this chronologically. So the first one that I want to talk about was Infernals.
Yes.
What are you most excited about with Infernals?
Oh, man. Probably, that's a hard question. Because we've been messing with Infernals for so long now. I'm trying to decide, just to be honest with you, if I'm going to collect them as an army. And the only reason is because it's releasing with, you know, Riot Quest is coming right around the same time.
Right.
And I plan on having the entire Riot Quest line.
Right.
And then also, I'm in the middle of painting all the new Monster Apocalypse models I'm picking up. Because I'm having a lot of fun with that. So I don't know that I will collect an army. If I don't collect an army, I think the Infernal Masters, I think Omodamos in particular, is just an absurdly good-looking model. I love everything about him, and I also love his playstyle.
Really, I feel like...
I'll be painting one of him up for sure.
I feel like a very legit answer to the question of what are you most excited about with Infernals is just saying Omodamos on the table. It is 100% legit.
Yeah. He's so cool and he's so much fun. And yeah, even if I don't collect the army, if I build a list, if I just have like one 75 pointer, it'll be an Amadeus list.
And one of the things that's interesting though about this faction is that it actually feels like it's going to be, if you decide that you want to dip your toe into Infernals, you can do a list and it'll be pretty inexpensive. And then you're actually, it's not a huge faction. And even compared to the other limited factions, it's even smaller than them. And so it's pretty easy if you enjoy that one list to get to two lists or to flesh out the faction and get it to where it's a pretty playable state.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, Lock and Load is right around the corner and people are going to get their hands on the models. And, you know, you're doing unboxings. Travis Marg got some to do like an unboxing early painting. So like now that the stuff, as the content creators, seeing the stuff be in people's hands is always like the best,
right?
And especially when they're like, they get it and they're like, this is amazing, I love it. Or even if they're like sometimes critical and they're like, I like this, but I don't like these things, like we can learn from that. So like,
right.
That's always joy is the thing you worked on for so long finally being out there.
One of the things that I'm excited about with Faction is that I can think of three pretty good friends who they have basically their entire War Machine career been excited about the idea of Infernals coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's actually a lot of people that they're like, I love War Machine, but I really wish that I could play Infernals. And I'm not sure that, you know, that there's anything else in the game that kind of has had that kind of longing.
There's two others.
Go tell me what.
So there are three things that people have always wanted a chance to play.
Okay.
And this is just many years of people talking at cons and stuff like that. It was Infernals.
One of them, I'm assuming, is you guys have said for a long time you're never going to do.
Orgoth.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. Orgoth is the second one.
Yeah.
And then Zoo.
Yep.
Zoo is the third one. And
yeah,
so being able to do one of those three, like, man, it would be so cool to finally see those. It is awesome.
It is interesting to me that, like, every time when there is, you know, run up to a keynote and people are, you know, having rumor mills about what's going to be the next thing. What's your guess? What do you hope it's going to be? Zoo is definitely one that is one that frequently comes out. I think it's one that Trevor's always been pretty excited about.
Yeah, for at least, I don't know, 6-7 years probably.
Yeah, I don't get it.
what's funny about Zoo is that people know it's like a southern, you know, continent. It's kind of like wild and primal, maybe. Like, there's so little information about actual Zoo that's concrete that I think a lot of people have an idea in their head of what they want Zoo to be. And that could be like, I want robots riding dinosaurs and like bee cavalry. But like, nobody knows for sure. Wait. Like, if
go back Zoo to the bee cavalry.
What's that?
Go back to the bee cavalry. That sounds Minions.
Yeah, Josh is in now. He wants Zoo as well now that there's bee cavalry. Bee cavalry confirmed. You heard it here first.
For all we know, if we ever did Zoo as a faction, it might be a bunch of factions because Zoo's a continent, right? Mm. And then if we like had a primary one, like, you know, totem hunters are from Zoo. So like, you know, is there like a totem hunter faction? Zoo is the interesting one because it's sort of this like true dreamland for a lot of people. Just like their pure imagination of what they think it might be, but we can never really know until we know.
But truthfully, there's other games that have a similar theme in their game or in their setting that we've pulled some of our own ideas from. I mean, I hate to mention it here, but Lizardmen from Warhammer, dinosaur continent in Forgotten Realms that I can't remember the name of. I mean, there are things that we've seen. Yeah, correct. We've seen that stuff in other games, so we sort of have an idea of what it could look like. And I guess that's where some of the excitement comes from.
And I get that, but if there's one thing that a lot of the IK factions have done is that they've definitely put their own spin on things. Like when I don't know if y'all remember when iOS first got announced, when Retribution was going to be a thing, right? Because for the longest time in Mark 1, iOS was the giant mysterious forest that nobody knew what was in there. And the only person that had any indication was Eris, right? She was the one elf in the setting. These are like way back in War Machine. So when we started showing off like Myrmidons and what Retribution technology looked like, it was very, very different than what I think what anyone ever expected.
That's for sure.
Fun to listen to sort of what people's ideas of what Zoo might be based on, like you said, sort of popular games and the way they've gone with it. But if it ever does get done, you know, just expect a definite unique IK flair to it.
I don't think we'd expect any less, but certainly there's some cool things out there in the game that we have very limited views into. I mean, the Totem Hunter and the Tazzelt Worm are the two that come to mind where we would love to see more of.
Have you seen the Ryquest dwarf, Balthazar Bamfist?
Yes.
The guy kind of looks like a little genie?
Yes.
He's from Zoo.
Oh, man.
I'm out. I don't want Zoo anymore.
He's a dwarf.
Exactly.
Aren't you contractually obligated?
So before we move on off of Infernals, I guess I have two. I guess these might be different topics. This is more upcoming release stuff other than Infernals, but these are kind of tied to questions from Lore Master Larson. So the first
Lore Master Larson?
Lore Master? Yeah.
Okay.
So the first one, the Privateer Press, as you've said, the Orgoth have been a repeated request over and over, and I believe that the developers, Matt, etc., have been pretty upfront in saying that Orgoth are not going to be an upcoming faction. I believe that
was said at one point, yes.
Okay. Granted.
We also said we were never going to make cavalry.
So yeah, never say never. That's the history.
You know, we could consider, I think, tabling for some time the Dank Dune memes format bit. If there was like a Will Quizzes Lore Master Larson
segment. This is an awful idea.
to replace it.
He doesn't even have to come on. Just send me the questions, Will. I will ask them absolutely. Each week. It will be amazing.
I will hum a soundtrack while he does it.
I'm in. I will do this 100%.
The other one,
So wait, what was the first question? You were talking about Orgoth.
Yeah, it was basically verifying if the devs have said that basically they're kind of off the table in development.
Yeah, I mean, yes, it has been said in the past they wouldn't come back. And you know, if they ever did, it would have to be really different. I think also, so when the Oblivion book comes
out, there would have to be, say, maybe some really big earth-shaking events going on, maybe?
Possibly, yeah.
interesting.
But for people that want to learn more about the Orgoth, there is information about them, new information about them, in the Oblivion book.
What?
That comes out.
Cool.
Because the Oblivion book has a ton of fiction and art in it, in addition to like the narrative campaign and all the Infernals and Order of Illumination stuff. And a big section of it is how long the Infernals have been interacting with the world and some of the things they did. And there's some cool revelations you're going to learn.
Nice.
Are we talking about the narrative campaign with Will at all?
Yes, we will be.
Okay. Carry on.
So the next question that you're going to refuse to answer anything on is that in a recent story put out by Aaron Rudell, it had information about flying machines or airships that Kador.
You know he's not going to answer this one. I don't even know why you're asking.
Created with the help of Circle. Do you have any interesting information in relation to that?
I do.
Okay. Do share.
I'm sharing it.
Oh, okay. But I have maybe interesting information. Maybe watch the keynote at Lock and Load for.
What I will share is that the end of the Stormbreak narrative ends at Lock and Load. And so people that have been starting with the first chapter, which was Winter Rampage, and then on to the Stormbreak League. If you want to see where all this is leading, it is leading to the Lock and Load finale event.
And have you guys given much information on the event? I thought that you had said that it was taking place on one of the airships. Is that correct?
No, we didn't say that. What I said is that it is taking place on and in a super weapon of some sort that has been created by Kador.
Mm. Oh, interesting. Mm.
Words are fun.
The tables that are going to be used for it are the combined length of the Boar's Gate table, but they're split up because teams will be fighting over different sectors of the super weapon. And I will let people see what it is, because when people walk up to the table and look at it, they're going to be like, oh my God, this is a real thing. And then the players get to decide if Kador is able to extract the weapon and then get to use it, which is all canonical. Like, it's going to actually affect the storyline, or if the whole thing gets blown up.
I am so torn right now.
Okay. Awesome. Well, that's, very exciting.
So it could be an airship. It could be a boat. It can be anything.
I'm pretty sure from what Aaron wrote, it's probably not a boat.
It could be a giant, you know, merpanda. I don't know.
I think you do know.
Could it be a bee?
Might be a flying boat.
Could it be a giant bee cavalry?
Oh my God, yes.
Okay, so next exciting item coming up, Riot Quest is for sale in August. I'm assuming that it will be at Gen Con.
Yes.
And this
is that guaranteed, or is that just hopeful?
Unless something goes very, nothing's guaranteed till it's at the show floor. But it's, I mean, something would have to go wrong for it to not be on sale at Gen Con.
Okay, awesome. So this has been kind of your baby in development, and so we would like to hear you gush about it.
Sure. So also the September solicitations just went up, which showed, yes, I think, 5 new heroes. And a lot of people have been asking, so for people that don't know what it is, there's a lot of videos you can go check on, like, previous Privateer Press dev chats and stuff that go a little bit deeper than we'll probably get to do on this podcast. But it is a casual, very quick arena skirmish game, a hybrid miniature board game. What I mean by that is that you build miniatures, you paint them like you're used to. It's played on a hex-based board. You have a crew of heroes that's minimum 5, maximum 10. The starter box comes with 5 heroes to get you started. You only have 4 of your heroes in the arena at one time. And when one dies, you spawn another one into the arena. So think very like video game, very Unreal Tournament, very MOBA-esque. The game is dynamic in that there is a deck of bounty cards that are worth victory points, and they have rules on them that say how you score them, and they change. They might be as simple as attack a certain type of character and knock them out, or they might put things in the arena, like a ticking bomb arrives. And you put it on this space in the arena, and the first person to grab the bomb and carry it to this spot before it explodes scores the bounty card. Every time somebody scores a card, you flip over a new one from the deck. So the way you actually win the game changes because you're playing with this deck every single time. It takes probably 5 minutes to learn the game and probably 20 minutes to play. And the game was designed so you can play 1v1, or if you just want to add extra players, you can do a 3 or 4 player free-for-all, and no rules change. There's no extra layers of things you have to do because it's an alternating activation game. You just go clockwise in order. It is vastly different than War Machine and Hordes. It is probably a little simpler than Monsterpocalypse. So people that are enjoying Monsterpocalypse or that style of game where you have a low model count, quick, easy rules, and something you can play very fast, it's that kind of game. And it's something that is built for, I don't want to call it like necessarily a party game because it's not quite a party game, but it's more like we've got 20 minutes, let's throw down. Or I've got somebody who's interested in this kind of thing. They want to paint miniatures, but they don't want something as deep and strategic as War Machine. They want a quicker, faster, far more lighthearted game. That's what Riot Quest is. It's also a game that you're supposed to, it is a beer and pretzels game, 100%. You are supposed to just throw down with your friends, have fun. There is player agency, like your decisions matter, and there is a winner at the end, so you can play to win. But it's a very, like, if you start playing the game competitively, it's not built for that. It's built for, you know, play, have fun. Your skill and your decisions matter, but, you know, there's not going to be any, like, hardcore tournaments with death clocks or anything for Riot Quest. And then the cool thing is, for anybody who plays War Machine Hordes, all the models that come out for Riot Quest, while they have their very unique, separate Riot Quest rules, I've been co-developing War Machine Hordes rules for all those models that will release the same day that those models hit stores. So every model can be played in War Machine Hordes.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's really fun. And, like, one of my main playtesters here is Tony. Okay. He's our video guy. And we have different playtest groups internally, and some people have better strengths. Tony is everybody knows him. He's like a family man. He's got two young kids, and he plays games when he has time. And the games he plays, he usually plays stuff that he can play with his wife and their, like, friends, who are not major gamers, but enjoy lighter hearted stuff. And he also plays with his kids. And so he's been in just a ton of my playtest games because he had both perspectives of a group of four adults sitting down to play a 30-minute miniature game like this, or him literally playing with his children. And we got amazing feedback out of both ways because it is not a kid's game by any means. You know, this is definitely ages like 14 and up. But knowing that it is family friendly is good because as us nerds all grow up, we're all starting to have families. And that is important for this growing generation to have stuff they can play with their kids.
It's true. That's cool.
Yeah.
What are you going to play with your grandkids, Josh?
I mean, it depends which line they've descended from. Oh, you know? Okay. You got to.
You mean which spiritual line?
I have to be the Bene Gesserit. You know, I've got to make sure how the breeding program has worked out.
Put your hand in the game box.
So,
are y'all always this dark, or is it just the recent developments?
We're getting older.
More cynical.
We're facing our mortality.
I had a week.
Yeah.
So I'm going to toss you a little bit of a hardball question here.
Sure.
Will.
And it happens as I hang up. Go ahead.
Okay.
But that's probably the best thing that would happen
for you. Yeah. This is a question that I've literally received multiple times about this game from customers as a retailer. Basically, it has various themes, but it goes along this line of, why should I care about Riot Quest or give Riot Quest a chance when I feel like I've been burnt on or dissatisfied with either Company of Iron or Widower's Wood or other peripheral Private Press games?
This is a hardball question.
No, it's fair. I mean, like, we make different offerings that do different things for different types of gamers. But I would say there has been definitely a change in approach to how things are being developed that are not War Machine Hordes that kind of started with Monsterpocalypse. And Monsterpocalypse has been doing, like, it's being continually supported. And I know a number one question a lot of people get is, well, these other games came out in the past and nothing came out for them. Is Riot Quest a one and done? Because people, if they're going to invest in something, they want to know it's going to be around for a long time.
Right.
And that they're going to be able to spend money. And the answer to that is yes, right? Monsterpocalypse has been getting just a ton of releases. And the second edition has been really successful and more people are playing it. And Riot Quest is the same way. I've already developed into 2021 in terms of releases for the game. And we're adding more. There was some, you know, the dev team grew. We got some extra members, which allowed some more dedicated individuals to be heads of unique projects, which helped a lot. Now, I do think that, like, Widower's Wood and Undercity and those games are great. I still play Company of Iron. But, you know, the Widower's Wood were definitely, like, one and done. And I know that kind of concerns some people. So my way to assuage their fear would be to let them know that, like, Monpok and Riot Quest have stuff for quite some time planned out. And also sort of the cross-purpose of Riot Quest in that you can use those models in War Machine and Hordes. It's a fun game. It's built for you to play and to enjoy. There's going to be organized play formats for it and stuff coming out. It's not going anywhere. And if you're worried about giving it a try and you play War Machine and Hordes, know that your investment will still have value to you because the models can be used in the other game as well. But thus far, every external person that I've sent full copies of the game, playtest copies, for them to play, they've loved it, and they just can't wait to start playing with other people. So, because it's really important to us that we, Privateer Press was known for War Machine Hordes, right? And War Machine Hordes is a really deep game that has a learning curve to it. And there are portions of the gaming audience that clearly does not appeal to. And as a company, it is important that we diversify and reach out to the larger audience of gamers out there, because we've got some really cool IPs. Like Monsterpocalypse is badass. Riot Quest is like this crazy alt sci-fi apocalyptic future that we've never really done anything like that. And the more people we bring in, the bigger our community gets, not just the War Machine community, but the privateer community. And that's just been more and more important. And so we're sticking with this stuff. That's why you should give it a try.
One of the things that I have said when people approach me with questions like that is granted, I approach this from a standpoint of I'm a Privateer Press cheerleader and I want to see you guys succeed. And so I do.
But also from a business standpoint, right? Like, sure, you probably also approach it as like, is this going to be a viable product for you?
Sure. Yeah. That's true. And it does feel like what we've seen with Monsterpoc has been very different versus some of the previous products. And I just think that people should be willing to approach it with an open mind.
Will you remind me, Jay or Will, what is my initial buy-in to Riot Quest? Like, is it a box that comes with a certain number of models?
$49.99 suggested retail.
Okay. And that has what in it?
So in that box, you get five models. Okay. Two of which are medium base, three of which are small base. So that's basically $10 a model right there.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're also getting all the dice you need to play. I think it is, it's.
And it uses the same dice as Monsterpoc, correct?
It does. It uses them in a different way.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So it has, I'm just doing the real quick. That would be what, 15 dice, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's 15 dice in the box. Six white, four blue, four red, and one standard D6. So, 15 dice, all the tokens you need, all the cards you need, because there's various different deck types in the game. There's like the random bounty deck, which is the VPs to win the game, the treasure table deck. Whenever time you open a treasure chest, you have these cards that tell you what you find inside, then the hero stat cards. And then you build a hand of gear upgrades that if you get enough treasure, you can buy upgrades for your heroes mid game. So you got all those cards. You've got the map. We're making neoprene mats. In fact, the only mats we'll ever make going forward will be neoprene mats. So the only paper mat is going to be the one in the starter box. And that's simply because size and cost, right? We couldn't put a neoprene mat in the box. And then you get the rule book. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else in that box. I think that might be everything that's in there.
Okay. It's a bargain at any price.
Yeah, I mean, I am excited to try it out.
Cool.
Yeah, and the list building, I say list building. There is no list building in the game. There's no point values in the game. You build a crew between 5 and 10 models. The standard game is minimum 5, maximum 10. And then that's between any models you own that are Riot Quest models. And then you'll have all these gear cards. All the gear cards are neutral. They work for any hero. And then you build a hand of gear upgrades that you might be able to unlock and purchase throughout the game. And you get a number of those in your hand equal to how many heroes you brought. So, and just because you buy a hero and they come with a new gear card doesn't mean you can only play it with that one. You can use it with anybody. And then the organized play that's coming out for it is going to introduce these little mini formats you can do where it's like one is called Adventuring Party. And it says everyone's crew has to be exactly 6 heroes. And there's 6 classes in the game, like fighters, gunners, scouts. And it says you have to have exactly 6 heroes and you must have one hero from each class represented.
Mm.
And so there's going to be little mini formats like that in the OP that says like, here's some fun variants, not even variants, just ways to play the game. Because the game is designed for you and your friends to sort of do that. And we just give you a little bit of guidance.
Okay. Last upcoming product that I want us to hear you gush over is Oblivion. So
yes,
I was excited to see as you said, the September solicitations just dropped. And Oblivion is on the September solicitation. And this has a narrative campaign. It has a rule update. And then, as you mentioned, it has some things, fluff information as well. Also on the September solicitations are several of the Archons.
Yes.
So
Oblivion is the big release for the game. And there's a lot of models around it, like the Infernals are coming out.
Right.
The Archons are coming out, the Order of Illumination models. But all of that is tied to Oblivion. Oblivion's the centerpiece of all of this. And it's been a while since we've done a book like this, and I miss these kind of books. These big overarching, it's got, you know, it tells a story of what's going on in the setting, provides you with more information, and then all the models in it are sort of just related to that. So, you know, Oblivion's not even a book, it's a box set. So the box set, you've got a revised rules digest, which I know a lot of people have been wanting more details on that. And I think at Lock and Load, we're going to go into more detail about it.
Oh, cool.
Then there's going to be the Oblivion book, hundreds of pages, tons of fluff, tons of brand new art, model entries without rules. So just like kind of fluff descriptions of every single model that you can take in Infernals, all the Archons. The Dunian Archon art is some of the coolest shit I've seen in a long time. I don't know if you have to bleep me out, by the way.
No.
No.
It's too late.
No.
My ears.
The Order of Illumination models, all that stuff. And then in addition to all this just like pure setting, which is really cool, there's like alternate paint scheme sections. So like when you look at the Order of Illumination guys, like their armor, it's like here's different ways you can paint their armor and then like specific names for that unique brigade or whatever. Like it's like, I love that kind of stuff. The stuff that lets you like really customize an army and make it feel like yours. And then there's the entire narrative campaign, like one of the most ambitious campaigns we've ever put out. That's this branching tree scenario campaign that you pick sides, either Guardians or Corruptors, or pro-Infernal or anti-Infernal, no matter what faction you're playing. Then you and your friends, it's built for 2 to 4 players, so just 2 people can do it. You play over about 4 to 6 weeks, and every time you play games, there's this big tree of scenarios, and it basically says, like, did you win or lose this one? Okay, this is your next scenario. Did you win or lose this one? You get these benefits in the next scenario you do play. And you end up, as a player, creating your own storyline. The story all being sort of initially about the arrival of the Infernals. And it all cultivates, no matter how many players you have, in a single scenario. All roads lead back to a single scenario with sort of the benefits and performance you've done thus far indicating the benefits you get in the final scenario, which is, does this big portal, one of the many Infernal portals, open in the city you're fighting near, or do you manage to shut it down?
Yes, it does.
You win as a Corruptors or Guardians, not as, you don't win as Kador or Legion.
Right. Clearly it has to be Guardians now.
Yeah. The coolest thing about it is this book introduces the Oblivion campaign system, which says here are the rules to run campaigns like this. And then it's got the entire first campaign. So it's like, here's the first campaign, here's the fluff, and here's 16 scenarios to run this first one. We're going to release for free more scenario or campaigns in the future, and they just plug in. So if you own the campaign, cool, the Oblivion book, you can take the free PDF of the supplement and sort of plug it into the main rules from the Oblivion book. And we're going to keep progressing the narrative of the Infernal Invasion in this manner. So
how fair is it to compare the Oblivion, what did you call it? The Oblivion campaign system to a legacy board game? Because that's the vibe I get as it's described to me.
I mean, it's kind of the same, right? You're playing games of War Machine. Every scenario has its own, like wherever you are on your scenario tree, it has its army building rules for that scenario, the win conditions for that scenario, the unique like rules that are in position, and then you move on to the next one. And so you're just playing multiple games of War Machine against a closed group of friends and then ending with a big finale, which is really similar to a lot of legacy games.
Right.
So people that like that style of thing. And I built it to take probably 4 or 6 weeks if you were playing, I would say slowly. If you're playing like a game or two a week, this will probably last you 4 to 6 weeks. If you and your friends get together and just blow out a bunch of games over a couple weekends, you can go through an entire campaign kind of as fast as you want. You're looking at a minimum of like probably 10 games per player, depending on how things go. So as fast as you think you could get, you know, 10 games of War Machine in.
In my younger days.
Lunchtime War Machines.
Like, that's all really exciting. And
yeah, this is one of the things that is cool is that, you know, it feels like there's been a fair number of naysayers in the world about War Machine and about Privateer Press.
Oh, I'm glad you clarified.
If you look at some of the things that the company's doing right now, there's just a lot of really exciting shit that is coming out.
And you know, one of the thing that we hear commonly, right, is War Machine is for competitive play.
Right.
War Machine is for competitive play. And then people will be like, well, if they supported more narrative, I hear that a lot too. I see it all the time online.
Right.
And honestly, if you look at the organized play that's come out for, let's say, the last, I want to say 6 years, it's almost triple the amount of narrative stuff that comes out versus competitive. But one thing we didn't have was an official product.
Right.
Like an actual campaign product. And so I'm really happy this is coming out because, you know, there's just a ton of people that don't go to the local store to get their games in. They just want to play with somebody on their kitchen table.
Right.
And this just helps support them and, you know, keep them going.
Okay, so final topic, Will.
Let's get it.
You wanted to touch on some topics related to sportsmanship. So what did you have on mind?
So one thing, you know, I get a lot of people asking me gray area questions. This could be like, is this conversion legal? You know, a lot of them are about sportsmanship. And that's because we've all got an idea of what's good sportsmanship and what's bad sportsmanship. Obviously, you know, being aggravating, being abrasive, obviously being abusive in any way, the table of bad sportsmanship. Cheating, bending the rules, not giving full disclosure, trying to, you know, anything like that, bad sportsmanship. But there's a lot of, like, conduct that it's hard to say if it's bad sportsmanship or not. And I think it throws a lot of people off. And like one good example that comes up that, you know, I'm always interested to hear what people's answers are. So I'll ask you this. This is for each other to answer. If you're playing somebody and they're trying to make some attack rolls and they roll snake eyes three times in a row and they are clearly frustrated by it, and you as their opponent say, "Oh, that sucks. You're having bad luck." Is that bad sportsmanship?
I'm going to answer your question with a question, Will. Is my opponent in this hypothetical example piloting a Vulcan?
No, they're playing minions.
Oh, then yeah, that's terrible sportsmanship.
It's terrible.
No, it's not.
No, I don't. I mean, the problem with that question is this, tone and, right, and a lot context. Of this
comes down to the intent of what you're saying.
What's your relationship with that opponent already?
Yeah. And what's the gray area? If you're in a tournament, if you go to a Masters and the person doesn't know your tone, because tone's very easy to misinterpret, right? So all you can do is think of the literal words that are being said, because different people will interpret different tones different ways. If that's happening to someone you've never met and you go, "Oh, that sucks. I'm sorry about your bad luck." And they can't read any inflection. Is that bad sportsmanship to have said that? And if it is, what is good sportsmanship in that sort of situation? Like, what is the proper etiquette against a tournament player?
If I was going on tilt, and if I felt like my opponent said that, but they were actually being sarcastic or that they were being insincere, depending on how, and granted, I don't get it as on tilt as a lot of people are, but there's people, like, if they felt that way, they'd be ready to jump over the table and... And go for the throat.
So is it safe for a player to not even say that then to you, Jay, because they don't know how you'll interpret their tone? Even if they mean it in a good way, it's safer for them to not even say the words because you may take it well, but somebody else might take it the wrong way, no matter how they meant it.
I mean, I'm sorry, but in my opinion, they can say whatever they want. It's up to you to how you take it. This is the prime example of water off a duck's back. If you're really going to take offense because they made a comment about what your dice rolls were, I feel like that's on you. I don't feel like saying something as innocent as that, you know, bad luck, even if there was a little chuckle involved and maybe it wasn't the best sportsmanship in the world, it's still on you as to how you react to it. Hmm. And whether or not you lose your temper about it, that's where the sportsmanship for you crosses the line.
And there are, granted, in general, War Machine has tried to promote sportsmanship in friendly games or whatever, but there's certainly genres of games where people will do stuff like that intentionally to try to
tilt you.
Yeah. And so this is something I always find fascinating. It's kind of my topic, is there are gray areas like this where you get different answers from people. And, you know, as a player, if you want to go in, and this is more for people going to larger scale tournaments, or if you're new to a game store, or you're new to an area and you don't know the players there, the question is, how do you play it safe? Or not even how do you play it safe? What should you do, right? Should you try and have a conversation with them beforehand, before the game starts? Or is it something that you just sort of like keep your mouth shut? And I'm asking these almost rhetorically because I think, you know, a lot of people have these questions and don't know what to do, or sometimes they just don't care and they do whatever they want and sometimes suffer the consequences because of it.
It feels like a lot of times if you are in a tense situation where your opponent is going on tilt and kind of raging, that unless you have a close relationship with them, that in general there's not a ton you can do to diffuse it, and it's usually better just to be kind of neutral.
So I feel like the what should happen here is the golden rule. You should treat them the way you feel like you would want to be treated.
Right.
And beyond that, if they don't take that well, then you've done what you could. You did the best you could, and there's nothing you can do about that. I had an instance at a major tournament where there was a rules disagreement, and I wasn't trying to be aggressive or anything. I was just saying, "Hey, I don't think that's the way it's supposed to be played. Can we call a judge over?" And then while the judge was being called over and we were waiting, my opponent was saying a few things to me, and I didn't say a lot back. I was just saying a few things. But afterwards, he told the greater public that he thought I was being rude because I wasn't engaging him. And I wasn't trying to be rude. I was just waiting for the judge to come over, and I didn't really have anything more to say. It was already a tense situation. I was treating him the way I would have wanted to be treated in that situation, but he didn't take it that way. He thought I was blowing him off a little bit.
Right.
Anyway, the judge came over, it was resolved, and we continued in the game. The point, I guess, is at the end of the day, the best you can do is treat others with respect and kindness the way you would hope that they would treat you. And then if there's still miscommunication between the two of you, which will happen from time to time, you just have to say, okay, well, that's going to happen from time to time, and be all right with that, and understand that sometimes you can't please all the people all the time.
Sure. Sure. And so, yeah, the topic I was bringing up is just, it's not even something that we will be able to answer all the questions here. It just might be something for your community builders to discuss on the group is, you know, what gray areas have you experienced and how did you resolve them? Or did you try to resolve them in something you thought was clear cut and it went the other way? Because I think the more that people openly talk about these things, the better, because, you know, a lot of people go to these tables. Everyone here, we've been to a ton of conventions. Some people go and they just get really nervous, right? And they don't want to open their mouth and they might have a bad time. And I think the more that people can sort of be like, what's acceptable and what's not, and what is actually a true gray area that you should have a conversation. One of the ones that causes more problems than I can think of is takebacks. Like if two players didn't discuss whether or not takebacks would be allowed to any capacity during a tournament game, and then midway through, somebody makes a really small thing like, oh, I forgot to move this guy in the unit. Do you mind if I move him? And their opponent says no. Like, I do mind. You cannot move him. Like, that has caused more drama. Usually it doesn't get, like, really loud. But, it's caused more, like, hurt feelings than I would think. And obviously, if they go, yeah, no problem. And then if that same person then asks for a take back later and their opponent goes, no, that's clearly, like, not okay. Well, I can't say it's not even clearly okay. It's just, like, there's not an establishment of like what is acceptable and what's not.
Certainly one of the more gray areas in the game. Like that is probably, yeah. You're correct in that gray area is more gray and murky than any other area that we've ever dealt with as a community.
Yeah, it is. And the thing is, these things come up and having run these tournaments, a lot of them are private conversations that people come up and talk to you about after the fact and stuff like that. And so I think it's just good if in general as a community, we talk about some of the things that maybe we might not think bothered, or something that somebody did that they didn't think bothered us, but it did. And the reason I brought up the say, oh man, I'm sorry about your luck statement is because I've had that one come up a couple of times where the other person felt they were being mocked when the person saying it was not mocking them, was trying to be legitimate and genuine about like, hey, I'm sorry, your dice suck right now. And you just don't see a lot of people talk about sportsmanship because it's sort of this like nebulous thing, right? Like, because it's unique to everybody of what they consider what's good or what's bad, minus the extreme examples of cheating and abuse and stuff like that. But I think if the more we share our experiences, the better it will be for the community as a whole as they get a broader view of what makes people happy, what makes them feel respected and comfortable, and what pisses people off.
The funny thing is it feels like the opposite could also be true if you rolled three double ones in a row and your opponent said nothing and just kind of stared at you. You could be offended by that as well. And I think that the point being is that, you know, you're in charge of how you feel about those sort of situations and you can't control your opponent. You shouldn't try. So I don't think in general, I don't think people are trying to, there is never their intention to piss you off at the table. You know, maybe there's something that happened previously and then tempers flare and now they're trying to piss you off. But originally that was never, they didn't come to the table like, watch this, I'm going to try to piss this guy off.
And the point of my discussion is, I guess, the more we arm people with the knowledge of the kind of things that do upset people that they might not consider, the less chance they'll have of running into it. And it's just a topic that does not get talked about a lot because it is so gray and difficult. And part of it is it's a conversation that you kind of have to call people out, right? You got to be like, oh, this thing happened and it made me mad. But I think the more that it's done in a constructive and respectful way, the more that the new tournament players will learn what is okay. And a pretty simple one is like clock management. Man, clock management, some people like that's almost caused fist fights. And for some people, it's just totally fine and they're cool with it. Like, oh, hey, you forgot to flip your clock over and other things. A lot of it's just conversations with your opponent and realizing it's a, you know, human being across the table from you that you're having to engage with. So,
right.
That is my super great topic I wanted to bring up and wanted to let people know. It's something I would personally just like to see people bring up more and talk more and sort of post their thoughts and feelings about, so that this giant social game of toys that we play, people get an idea of what is more acceptable. A lot of gaming communities sort of police their own, right? Of what is okay and what's not. And it does change from game to game. And the War Machine community has a lot of that going on, but I do feel like there's a little bit more direction, a little bit more just sort of the general consensus of what's cool and what's not cool.
Yeah, you
know, it's not a guideline. Nobody's going to slap your hand, but what's cool and what's not cool?
Yeah, the little social taboos that come up in your own little groups that are different when you move to a different group. That was one of the things that caught me as odd when we started moving outside of our group, was some of the things that I saw as being socially taboo at the gaming table that I never even thought of. And I'll go way back. When we first started playing in Mark One, we had never really, the only time we ever measured our control area was when we were declaring it or when we were measuring something. We would not stop during the middle of a model's movement to measure our control area. And then we went to and it was just something that we kind of nebulously did as a group. It isn't necessarily something that was said out loud. And then we went to another area, and in that area, they would do what you do more in modern War Machine. They'd move maybe an inch, and then they'd check their control area, and then they'd move another inch, check their control area, move another inch, check their control area. And we saw it as egregious at the time because we were new to the game. We had no clue. And to us, I'd come from, older games where that was a big no-no. And before long, there's nothing against it in the rules. We started realizing, oh, that's actually the way a lot of the people are playing it, and it's totally okay. And so when you come from these small groups and you come into these larger groups and you have these social taboos that you brung in from other places, I mean, I've had people get pissed off at me at major conventions for bringing the quote-unquote hot list.
But
at a major event, they're like, well, yeah, well, you're just kind of a dick for bringing that list. Like, what? I mean,
you are.
okay, that's probably true, but not because I brought the list, though.
Oh. You sure?
No.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Not really.
And I also think it would be interesting for us to start a thread in the community builders and have some discussion on various topics like these, where we get some discussion going on with it.
I also encourage you, Will, to in our Lore Master J minute, to every once in a while, just throw in an ethics question, a gray area ethics question. We'll just try to throw him off balance about.
And he can answer it in the context of lore.
Please send them in the form of trolley questions.
In there, like your first question will be like, what was the name of the Orgoth ships that were so adept at crossing the Meridius? And then the second question is, what is the current location of Charsog? And then the third question is P.F. Chang's a sin? The answer is yes.
I'm very excited.
P.F. Chang's is fine any other time except for when you're there. You just
Jay makes it sinful. I get it.
I'm very excited that soon we shall get to feast like kings together, Will.
Oh, dude, I'm taking you to Din Tai Fung in Seattle, and we're going to eat our body weight in dumplings.
Oh, I am deeply jealous.
I'm not. Are we sure that Brian won't get sick off of this?
No.
Okay.
There was no guarantee.
Okay. All right. Well, we would like to thank you very much for being a guest on the podcast, Will.
A pleasure as always.
Awesome. Josh.
Yes, Jay.
Do you happen to have our closing dad joke for us?
Well, did either of you guys see the joke that I posted recently about my spine?
I don't believe so.
It was about a week back.
Oh.
I thought there was more coming, and then I realized that was it.
Woozing!
I'd already missed it.
Trevor, do you have anything for us?
Sure. Let me see what I can pull up here.
Is this the cue corner? Are we going to the cue corner?
Sure. We'll go. Since Josh is in his hating the HIPAA violation that is the Vulcan, I'm going to give him the top five rules in Crucible Guard that make you go, Number five.
That's not the noise I make.
Flying models on hill gain elevation and are harder to shoot. Number four. Sure, arcing fire can shoot over hills, a line of towering colossals, or heck, entire armies. But a few puffs of smoke? Oh my gods, where did they go? Number three, Alice can transform into a giant monster unless there are two people standing. I've already done all these, haven't I?
No, I don't remember.
I totally remember this one. Okay. Unless there are two people standing next to her, then it would be impolite. I've done these before, but we will continue.
Very, very well.
Because I may deliver them better than I did last time, I'm sure.
Clearly.
Number two, go ahead and ram your train into a line of enemy soldiers, but stop immediately once you hit one of them. And number one, the top rule of Crucible Guard that makes you go, troops wearing leather coats, immune to fire and corrosion. Towering robots covered in heavy armor, not immune to fire corrosion.
It's really good leather, dude.
I'm pretty sure I could pull up the wrong
one. It's probably Orgoth leather.
I apologize, Mark. I know you gave me more newer ones than that one, so.
Next time.
Yeah, maybe. Don't count on it.
So, we will have an awesome episode next week.
Agreed.
I do not know the topic.
Are you saying this episode wasn't?
No, we usually try to, because we're professional podcasters. William, we tried to give a preview of what's going to be upcoming, but
yes,
we failed. But it will be awesome. I
mean, it'll be the pre-Lock and Load show, right?
Possibly, yeah.
Sure.
Since Jay's the only one.
That's a great idea.
Jay's the only one going, so.
Don't make me sad.
Just hop in a car.
I'm having a HIPAA violation right now.
Excellent. Well, on that note, we would like to thank everyone for listening to another episode of
Chain Attack.
Chain Attack!